Welcome to CodeCast. We're a podcast that focuses on everything tech, and we give you an idea of what developers, startups, and creatives are up to in Zambia and across Africa. Every 2 weeks, we explore different topics and applications of technology in the real world. Every episode is brought to you by Agora Code Community. For more information, visit agoracode.community or follow us on Twitter at CodeAgora.
Hi, I'm Twombo, co-founder at InvestorSani, and you're listening to the CodeCast.
Welcome to episode 12 of CodeCast. Topic today, bootstrapping projects using open source. I'm Elias, today Cynthia isn't around, but the rest of the panel is.
Hi, everybody. Mukuma here.
Hey, guys. Wesley here.
And we have a guest.
Yeah, who is the guest?
Oh, wow.
That's a good start. Who is the guest? Thank you for kicking it off.
Guest.
Please start.
Who are
Introduce
you?
Introduce yourself.
Hey, guest.
Yes,
please.
Guest.
Yeah.
Glad to be here. Yeah, Twombo, developer. Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's always nice meeting people you meet online, like in real life.
We met online? Oh my God.
Yeah, online.
Yeah, we actually did meet online. Like, I think I followed you on Twitter after like finding Silhouette. Yeah, like I found this little larval thing.
Yes,
not little. So like I forked it, and then Twitter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now we're here.
Mm-hmm. Now we're here.
So now here we are. Okay. So before we get into the topic of the show, shall we get into some news?
Oh yeah, definitely. As per custom, news. Yeah. So we have a lot of news, like a lot of stuff happened. Mm-hmm. We'll try cram as much stuff as we can, but honestly, we might not be able to.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about some of the big news that happened this week, but we won't be able to cover everything.
You know what was big?
Mm-hmm.
Google Stadia.
Yeah. I have opinions on this.
Me too.
But
it's just Google being Google, guys.
Well, perhaps let's get into it, right? So Google Stadia is Google's streaming service for games. Now, if you haven't heard this before, it's because it rarely happens. Okay, so there are services that do streaming, like PlayStation Now is available. Mm. Like it offers streaming, though it doesn't offer like PlayStation 4 games. I think it offers a few of them, but like it's not the promise of Google that is saying, hey, 4K 60 frames per second,
bruh,
like, across all devices,
bruh,
across, anywhere.
I know,
bruh.
Like it's basically them saying like you don't have to buy like a box anymore. You don't have to buy like.
Mm.
A specced out PC or anything.
Hmm.
Just buy our controller, subscribe, and we'll sort you out.
Do you know what you do need to buy though?
What do
a
you
crazy internet connection.
Thank you for stating that
out.
Like I think the minimum requirement is 30 megabits per second. why
minimum?
Yeah. So megabits, not megabytes. Like megabytes, it's like 3.75 or something like that. But that's still a lot. Now, for context, you're not getting it in Zambia anytime soon. Both from the perspective of streaming and also availability. Like it's not coming here anytime soon. Mm. But we need to talk about it because, especially for me personally as a gamer, there's a lot of this going around, like the conversation of, where is gaming going? Like, are we going to be buying consoles in the future and whatnot? And I'd just like to point out that it's pretty similar to what happened when we're coming from the PlayStation 3 to PlayStation 4 generation. Mm. People are like, yo, consoles are out, it's over. Like, we're moving to mobile gaming now. Like, that's the future.
Mm.
We'll talk more about that in a bit, but people keep saying that the whole buy a box, play games on it model is going
outdated.
Honestly,
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No,
I think it's going to evolve.
Yeah,
but not anytime soon, especially with like streaming services, guys. Yeah.
No, but then if we talk about but not even the game soon, like what kind of period are we looking at? Because in my head, when I was listening to like the keynote, it was great and everything. I was like, yeah. Like every single thing. I was just like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hmm.
Then it settles in. You're like,
Wait a minute.
Like, if all things considered, right? Yeah. 10 years, 15 years, consoles kind of phase out. Yeah. Everything considered. Like, yeah. if we have good internet connection, affordable too, across the globe, you know, all that stuff. It's feasible. But then that's just not the case.
Yeah, that's on paper. I think Google is an ambitious company known to try anything once, at least just once.
So the model is fail until you get it right. So
oh, is that
no,
the model?
But yeah. here's the thing, right?
It's new.
Google,
it's not their tagline, but
yeah,
it's like a
okay, that makes sense then. This makes sense.
Google are jumping into this, but they're not the first to like play around with like streaming. Like I've already mentioned, like PlayStation bought Gaikai a few years ago that were doing video game streaming. That's now PlayStation Now. So there's services that you can actually use to stream. I think there's another one. I'm spacing on the name, but Google aren't the first.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, Google are trying to basically get the whole Netflix model and say, okay, this is a streaming service. One. Two, you're going to pay a monthly subscription and you're just going to be given a library of games. So that means they're partnering with third-party developers. So I think on stage they were showing Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Id Software's Doom Eternal, which I'm so hyped for. They said it's going to come to the platform as well. It's going to be 4K, 60 frames per second. Like that's
I
really ambitious. But here's the thing, right?
I'm sorry.
let me just for context, right? Yeah. Microsoft has Game Pass, which is not a streaming service, but it is a subscription model. And you have games in that subscription model that you can play. Difference is you don't have to stream them. They just let you download them and play them. But it's a subscription model. Mm. That is like kind of like a midway, right? It's following the subscription model that is becoming so popular in services nowadays. Like you subscribe for a service, you don't have to worry about buying things, you just have to do things. But it also understands that you're not able to stream games. Games are different from video. Like you can stream 4K video and it's fine. But when you're interacting with something, that latency, that lag.
So even that multiplayer aspect.
Yeah.
So they did a demo, right? Was it Assassin's Creed?
To be honest, I stopped halfway. I didn't watch the demo.
I didn't actually watch the full keynote.
Yeah.
I was the first 15-20 minutes, I was like blown away.
Mm.
But then like halfway through it and I'm like,
this is not for me.
No.
Yeah.
It's really not.
This is the thing that bothers me about a lot of technology, especially the hype around technology in recent times.
Mm.
There's a lot of stuff that's not relevant to a lot of us as consumers. And it's not even just us in like less developed countries, but even
everywhere.
Outside of us.
Yeah, that's very true.
There's a privileged few that can afford to do some of this stuff, which is a huge market, sure. Gaming PCs do a ton of business in the US and in Europe. You know, but things like that 30 megabits. Well, I don't think you need 30 megabits, but I think 10 you'll be fine. But still, getting 10 here that's not shaped, good luck. and you know that kind of thing is really expensive here. I mean, the last I knew, you're looking at to get like a 10 meg connection in Zambia. You're looking at what is it like 1.5, 1.7. 1,000 kwacha, something like that.
It's about 1,000. It's about 2,000 kwacha. Yeah.
Nearly two grand, right? But just jump away a couple of countries to SA, and you can get a 10 meg at in the region of like 350 rand.
Yeah.
Uncapped.
I've got a question though. Why is there such a like? Okay, we're going to talk about they're near the ocean and all that stuff.
Mm.
Like, it's not just there. Like, there's other countries that are landlocked just like we are, but pay significantly less for an internet connection. Like, what's the issue?
Infrastructure. You can get fiber here in Lusaka. There are billboards telling you can get fiber in this neighborhood.
Straight to your doorstep.
Yeah.
Except you can't.
There's no fiber in Ndola.
There's no fiber in Chelston.
No, but
there is fiber in the ground.
Oh,
there is
okay.
none
okay.
in anybody's house because they're still building the infrastructure. So at the moment, like what you're doing is basically paying the cost for the development of the infrastructure at present.
Yeah.
So whilst it's still a niche market for a lot of people, you know, you're the one going to be supporting the rollout of that product until the price can come down. So it'll be expensive until, you know, people are getting fiber in, I don't know.
Yeah.
Charleston.
I also would have been impressed if they demoed the multiplayer game, but to a single player.
So the multiplayer aspect of it is... I don't even think is the issue, because like when you're playing multiplayer games, you're pinging a server anyway.
Yeah.
So that isn't going to change. Actually, it might even improve a little if you're both playing on the same server. That way, it's registering like it's registering input.
If there's a minimum threshold for your connection quality in order to use the platform, then definitely, yeah, it makes the multiplayer experience much better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because
so
at the moment, you'll be playing multiplayer and one person's on, you know, one.
Yeah.
One
person's yeah, then, on a 5 yeah. Top exactly. Yeah. So.
This guy's on a 10 meg connection.
Exactly.
And he's owning because he's.
You know? Everybody he's like you see it all the time.
It's quicker.
Yeah. Like he shoots you like 2 times. You empty a clip and nothing because you're lagging.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the issue is the input lag. Right, when you're playing games, you don't want to press a button and wait even microseconds.
Yeah.
Like it's noticeable when you're playing games.
Spoken as a true gamer.
Yeah.
No, it's not even that. Like these things, you actually notice them. Like I was playing the Anthem beta recently with a couple of friends, and there was this bug where I was getting lag every time I fired my gun. Not even lag. Registering the shots when I'm pressing the button and it's taking a millisecond, and like I noticed that thing, and for me, like I was like, okay, so I'm not buying this game.
Ish.
So if that's going to be a problem across all the games with Stadia, I'm not in. I'm definitely not in.
Well, and if Google is listening, there's some free consumer habit.
Yeah, but they're smart. They know that.
But like, what's their selling point? Like, is it You don't get the box, you just get the controller.
Yeah.
What's
you can
is that their selling point?
I think the thing about this, the real opportunity for them, and why, actually, just like Elias, I can't remember the companies. I've watched like 3 videos about companies doing this. You know, they talk about new data centers that they're building, wherein the main focus is on GPUs, not on CPUs and the regular things that data centers focus on, but mainly on. Yeah, we're putting so many GPUs into this one box. In this box, you know, we've got virtualization going on.
And yeah.
We've got like 6 GPUs in this box, our own design, et cetera, to run this experience, et cetera. You know, that kind of thing takes the onus off of the consumer to have the adequate hardware to play a specific game. Mm. So if you're a PlayStation fan or an Xbox fan, whatever it is, A, you don't care about that and playing with your friends, it doesn't matter what platform you're on.
Yeah.
Then B, you don't have to have all of that envy when a new product is announced and have to start figuring out, do I sell this one?
Yeah.
Do I go all in and just buy the new one, keep the old one and all of that? I think that's what they're going for, is the fact that you don't have to upgrade hardware or maintain hardware in the first place.
Yeah.
And anywhere you go, as long as you've got that connection, you take your gamepad with you and you can play wherever it is that you are, as long as you have a screen and your gamepad. That's the whole selling point of it.
It's similar to how it moved from buying DVDs to streaming video on Netflix, right? You have all this content on Netflix and you just pay a one-time fee and
you have access to everything.
You don't have to worry about, you know, lugging around like all you need is your TV, your phone, which is also another thing about Stadia. You'll be able to play it on your phones, your PC, regardless of what you have, right?
Yeah. Like, and I've got a question, right? Availability aside and so on and so forth, connections, bandwidth, network infrastructure. Do you think this is an opportunity for, like, you know, small studios, indie games to, like, make a bit of cash?
So it's an opportunity whenever a new platform is kind of brought up. So if, let me give you a perfect example, right? The guys that make Unreal, the Epic Game Store, right? They just came on and they're like basically saying, okay, we're gonna fight with Steam, we're gonna like challenge the whole PC gaming thing, we're gonna And their big selling point to developers is instead of the 30% cut that Steam gets from game developers, theirs is like 12%. Mm-hmm. So that in and of itself is incentivizing developers to put it on their store. Yeah. Now, developers are going to put it on the store because they know they're going to make more money, but then you also look at the install base. So when you're developing a game for PS4, you know, okay, there's this many people that have a PS4. This many people have this, and this. Okay, now that kind of changes when you're having a subscription model.
Mm-hmm. They're also incorporating the whole development thing as part of Stadia. Like, you can develop on Stadia using Unreal for now. I don't know if
So like the benefit to developers, right? Whatever platform is giving developers more visibility is perfectly good for them, right? So in the case of Epic Game Store, right, you have the benefit to developers that they are going to be making more money because Steam gets a 30% it gets a 30% cut of profits across the board, right? Epic Game Store cuts that down to 12%. So when you're looking at a platform that is giving people more visibility, inherently you want to be on that platform, right? Because, well, at least in the traditional model, you get more money the more sales you make, and the more sales you make is dependent on how visible your game is and how many people you put that game in front of, right? But with the subscription model, it's kind of different, right? You're not making money on sales. I'm assuming you're going to make money on streams, or how?
I'd love to know what that whole model is as far as developers is concerned. Like, I already have a lot of misgivings about this whole model because of the way that music streaming works. So it's for your developer, because if the platform is what you develop on now, and they're giving you access to perhaps engines or frameworks that you didn't previously have access to. Yes, there are some open source engines and frameworks, etc., but a bunch of them you pay for, right? So for your smaller developer, or even your guy at home, because this happens all the time, you have small developers who manage to create huge things that blow up and become the next huge thing. For those people, this is now an opportunity to, okay, I'm developing for Stadia, and it doesn't mean I'm developing for PC, I'm developing for Mac, or I'm developing for Linux, for PlayStation, or for Xbox, or for Android. You know, like, there's so many platforms that you can target as a games developer, or any developer. The minute that, as a games developer, because this is hard, life cycle for development for most games is what, 2 years? This is where you've actually got everything on lock. You have all of your stats in place, all of your information, etc. So if you're just starting out, something like, I would guess, 3 years, you got to do your research, get your skills up, etc. If you can cut that down, and when you release, you're releasing onto every possible platform there is, great stuff.
It's a plus.
So it would actually be really interesting, because the thing with Stadia is you don't have to build up the install base, right? Ideally, in an ideal world, you don't have to...
You just have to fight for visibility versus all the AAA titles.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking about. Like, now you're in a pool fighting with like AAA games. You're like a small indie developer, and you're like, crap.
But that's always the case.
There was a game, what is this thing called? A Dark Room, I think. I think it was called A Dark Room. You can put this in the show notes or something. You'll find it. But anybody who's listening, just Google that, A Dark Room. This game, small indie game that ran, I think it was 2016, if I'm not mistaken. I'm guessing, right? At this point, I'm reaching into my memory. But tiny game, but people went crazy for it. Absolutely crazy. And that's the thing. People like an experience. They'll share that experience. They'll want people to have that same
experience.
The same way that people talk about, dude, Game of Thrones, Red Wedding, must watch. And you know, you want to have the same experience. So if that happens, all the people who are interested in trying out, that little unknown game and whatever it is, they'll create the hype that's required for people to actually share that experience. And it's just easier because, you don't have PlayStation. But you don't have Xbox. Yeah. Oh, Yeah, it works on Android. Mm. I don't like gaming on my phone, you know. So now it's, dude, use whatever you want, you know, but play this game. It's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, but that's must how say, I got my first console. I felt left out.
Oh,
so
that's sad.
Pretty much the same. And he's not sad. He got a console. Happy ending.
Okay. You know what? Before Elias gets goes in on this.
No, but okay.
Anyway,
other news items.
I was just about to say, it's Stadia is only available for the Chrome browser, by the way. So there's a catch.
I was actually going to ask how, like, in the future, like, let's say Stadia gains, you know, the traction that it needs to gain to become a big thing, right? Do you think the big three, Nintendo, Microsoft, and PlayStation, say, okay, we'll create an app for you on your PlayStation that you can use to stream Stadia games. You'll be able to use your PlayStation console. Like, the thing is, I see Microsoft doing that.
Nah.
I do not see Sony doing that.
Okay, I don't know what Microsoft's trajectory will be with that, because Microsoft's been interesting with the moves that they're making of late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But to be quite honest, they run arguably the biggest cloud platform, at least for enterprise. I don't see why they need to, let's accommodate Stadia when they can do it themselves. They do have their own publishing powerhouse with Microsoft games, and all the relationships are available. They could just make friends with Nintendo and PlayStation and say, dudes, let's make something together.
So the thing is, the thing is, Microsoft's strategy of late hasn't been, okay, this is a competing thing, so we're not going to. It's kind of been, okay, we have these services. Like, case in point, recently the Master Chief Collection was announced for PC, right? There's a Microsoft store on PC, but they said it's going to be available on Steam as well. Like, people don't seem to, like, realize the significance of that, because Microsoft is, like, basically saying, okay, our competition is going to have this game as well. Like, that's basically taking away one of the reasons to get an Xbox, or one of the reasons to use the Windows Store. You can get the Xbox, like, one of the big Xbox games on Steam. Okay, so I that's why I say I see Microsoft doing it. I do not see Sony doing it.
Okay, but while we're on this, right? Apple with Arcade.
So yeah, let's get into Apple with Arcade, right? So Apple's Arcade is basically more similar to Microsoft's Game Pass, except it's kind of for mobile games. So yeah, it really is for mobile games, even though they're saying it's going to be available on Mac and iPad.
Can I just say that Apple lacks direction right now? It's a spray at this point.
I must say, after this accurate conference, I agree. No.
This is sad at this point. Like, I've got no words for this.
Can I just say? I think added me in a tweet that was like, Microsoft is becoming like general dealers and whatnot.
Yeah, he basically said Apple should rename their brand to Apple General Dealers.
I didn't get that tweet. I don't even know who tweeted it. Like,
it's actually Luigi, Radio Phoenix guy.
So I didn't get what he meant by that. I would say that this conference just showed that Apple is, like you said, kind of swinging for the fences and hoping something sticks. Because if you noticed, none of their products had any kind of release date. They announced their Apple Card. They announced Apple TV streaming service, Apple TV Plus. They announced News Plus. They announced Arcade. None of them have a set date. None of them have any kind of pricing. They basically had, and these events are not cheap.
There was pricing for some of this stuff.
Did you see the celebrities on the stage, bro?
That's case in point, right? They didn't show us anything. If you think about it, they didn't show us anything. They basically just said, "Look at all the people we're working with.
That's marketing.
No. We're running out of patience. I think I'm not even an Apple guy, and I know you guys are running out of patience. Like, how much longer are you gonna take this scam?
Okay. I just want to understand how, as somebody in the Apple ecosystem, you're expected to buy into all this stuff. all of this was subscriptions. Average subscription price of any product at the moment, $10.
Yep.
How many products did they announce?
Four?
So, bumping up, in addition to Apple Music and whatever else you're
Apple Music, moment, iCloud storage.
So let's add another $40. Like, do your pockets go this deep as a consumer? Like,
so,
it's real?
Here's one thing I'll say about their whole subscription model. I feel like the company that comes out, like, because these guys are all trying to keep you in their ecosystem, right? So Apple is basically saying, okay, Disney's coming out with something, Netflix is huge, Google are doing their YouTube Red and whatnot. We want to get in on this, okay? So they're basically saying, we have a large number of people that, you know, have iPhones and MacBooks. Like, the install base is huge, especially in North America. They're basically saying, we're going to provide a service that works best with these devices that we know everyone has, right? That's their whole shtick. That's what Apple does, right? Apple Music. I'd like to see the number of people that are on Apple Music that use Android phones. Like, it must be like a handful of people. Like, I thought it was Spotify. I accidentally. Wow. But like, back to Arcade. I don't get it, but I've got to say, I prefer this model. Okay, let me back up. I prefer this model to Stadia's model because it lets you download the games. It lets you play the games offline. Yeah. And I've got to say, the developers that they listed are pretty decent. I know they're mobile games, so I'm not going to play any of them. But these are like, they've got Devolver Digital. These guys developed or like published Hotline Miami,
one of
my all time favorite games. Okay.
Also, they've your got, favorite soundtracks.
I still can't believe you don't enjoy Hotline Miami soundtrack.
No. I enjoy it, but just not as much as you.
For another time. the point is they have like big guns, and obviously they're going to get big guns. They're Apple. They have the money. Yeah, but you're looking at like what they're trying to do. I'm thinking to myself, like, if the games could be like really good on like an Apple TV or something, they actually have a shot, because this model, unlike Google's model, doesn't require that you have a bomb-ass internet connection, right? You can basically do what, like I said, Game Pass is doing, and I really think that's the best approach. It's like a middle ground, right? Okay, you don't have the best internet connection, but you want to be paying for games, or you want to pay a subscription, and you want to forget about this subscription, or you want to forget about this one-time payment, and just have it recurring like we do with Spotify, Netflix, you know, these things. Like, personally, that's just become a part of my life.
You know what, Elias? From what you're telling me, I need some Apple money too. All this stuff I have to subscribe to. Come on, guys.
No, it's so I feel like I'm not getting my point across. I agree with you guys. Okay. There are too many subscription models, especially with Apple. It's like Apple is just saying, okay, there's all these things that you can subscribe to. If one person could subscribe to one thing on their iPhone, then I think we're making a lot of money.
Yeah.
I think what rubbed me the wrong way about this, and I didn't watch the keynote. I don't watch Apple. I've never watched an Apple keynote. I don't, but I've stopped watching keynotes anyway. I never have. Apple, no.
Even Steve Jobs, like never. When he was like doing his whole...
Never. Just not bothered. Anyway, like the thing
because
that
you don't, okay, never mind.
I'm not a fan of the Apple ecosystem.
Never been.
No, never. So we'll get into that when we talk about me and my history. But I'm a completely I was a complete Windows person. But anyway, besides the point. So the thing that rubbed me the wrong way about Apple's whole rollout and announcement was the card, because that's like just greed. That is like. the shareholders getting up and into arms and saying, why is Microsoft now the most valuable company in the world when we were just a couple of months ago, and can we make more money? These iPhones are not doing numbers anymore. Yeah. We released three of them and they're not pushing units.
Yeah.
And they basically answered with, okay, let's figure out how we can get more money by making people accrue debt. Because that's what the card is.
It's a credit card.
Yeah, it's a credit card.
It's a credit card. It's debt. I don't have money today, but I want that new iPad.
That's great.
That's perfectly put. And you know, they made this whole thing about how like you don't have to use your banks and like it's us that are managing. And I'm like, guys,
basically they're your bank.
What do you do? This is not the way that you're supposed to go, because like you're saying, it just comes off as greedy. Like you're basically saying, okay. Like you said, like iPhone sales are not doing numbers anymore. Like I think the market has saturated, or people are just saying like the iPhone isn't innovating anymore.
There's just so many other devices for an even cheaper price.
It's
not even just that. There's so many other devices that are all good and that last longer. So the usage cycle, the re-up cycle is way longer now.
Yeah.
The last phone I had for 4.5 years.
Yeah.
I can't talk about
how long I had my last phone.
No, but like, yeah, exactly. Like, so like the market is basically saying, look, my phone still works fine. Exactly. Why should I replace it? Yeah. Okay. So now they're thinking about more ways to make money. Mm-hmm. So they're pushing these services. Okay.
Yeah. And that's what T said, you know.
Yeah.
There's no point of direction at this point.
No, there's not.
You know what? We could talk about Apple. We could talk about Apple all night. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually enjoying this.
Okay.
You know what? In brief. So MTN launched this thing. You can now buy airtime through like WhatsApp. It's about, you know, basically USSD. You know, your whole *114 or whatever.
Yeah.
Can buy airtime, but through WhatsApp. And I don't know. I don't know if this is really.
Where does the money come from?
So wait, I need to remember this. It's through your MTN money account, I think, that gets charged. I thought about this.
Push USSD, is that what happens?
So
similar to what we have on this side, basically.
Yeah, very similar. So you have a specific bot number, you basically text it, then it gives you options. One, sends you back a response.
Okay.
Three, sends you back a response.
How do you feel about bots?
Well, I feel like it's convenient, but it's like half and half. Like we talked about Twitter, for example, and how there's like been this really huge influx of bots. You don't know what's real and what's not.
Yeah.
In another episode, we talked about the lady that called into a dealership and there was a bot and they couldn't identify, you know, like they thought she was a bot and she had to walk into the store to actually prove that she wasn't a bot. I don't know. Google Assistant, also convenient.
Facebook, not Allo.
What was it called? It made a huge splash. Like it sounded like a person, like talking, making a reservation. It was on a keynote. You probably didn't see it.
I read about it later, but I just don't watch the live.
Look, like first thoughts, right? It's really good. Like it's really good innovation. There's a lot of convenience. That's what we crave for.
So, right now, I use the My MTN app for all of my things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now. What exactly is so much better about opening up WhatsApp, finding a chat, texting the thing, a bunch of things, versus just using their app?
This is exactly what I had in mind.
Like,
it's cool.
Is this really convenient?
It's not. How is it better? No, it's not any better.
Like, in the initial run, it sounds like a really good idea. Like, when I stumbled across this, I was like, yo, great. Then I thought about it, I'm like...
Is it really relevant?
To me, it sounds like just another thing to talk about and wanting to be the first.
Another gimmick.
Yeah, another gimmick. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is actually adding any value to the ecosystem.
No, it's not.
It sounds like somebody had an idea and knew the right person who could push it through so that they could get paid.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like to me, if I'm really honest. I don't.
No interesting value.
So they're talking about like in the future, right? They want you to be able to store your credit card as well. Information, but and I'm like red flag.
Wait, sorry, MTN.
Yes, so like eventually.
That's a very good question. That's a very like, where is this credit card information going to be stored?
So like, this is an attempt. You know how WhatsApp is everywhere. Like they have a lot of users and stuff like that. So they anticipate that if they build an entire like platform on top of WhatsApp, they can basically. Make more money.
Yeah.
I'm not putting my credit card information there.
Here's the thing, even the infrastructure, but like that's actually almost a step backwards, because like to your point, like I use my FNB to buy most of my like I'm on Airtel, but like most of my like mobile airtime and stuff like that, right? I just go to the FNB thing, and that means the only way I'm interacting with Airtel is basically through my bank, okay? Mm. Not through Apple Card or whatever.
Do you have Airtel money?
No, okay. I don't use Airtel money. I don't use MTN money. Everything I do, I basically buy through my FNB account. Mm-hmm. Okay,
so and it works.
And it works perfectly, might I add. Dude, okay, now they even removed it. They removed those like little costs that they used to charge you So now I just buy it, and big ups. But like, I'm now thinking like, why would I remove myself from the comfort of knowing that the only person that has my bank information is my bank, as in an ideal world it should be, at least in the context of Airtel.
You guys should do an episode about e-commerce safety with your transactions, finances, whatever.
Definitely.
You should do something along those lines. Yep. But I definitely think that you're right. Being in one ecosystem as far as your payments is concerned is fine enough.
Yeah.
I don't know who is left out that they felt they needed to introduce WhatsApp for. Because if you've got WhatsApp, this means that you're not on a feature phone, which is fine, because you can still use USSD. Because if the primary payment option is through your mobile money, then on a feature phone, you're fine, because you just do the USSD thing. I'd argue it's probably faster once you've memorized all of the things.
Yeah.
Like you can probably do it faster than talking to the chat
line. Yeah.
There's just no need. Like, look, so, like purchase data on WhatsApp. Like, what am I using to purchase the data in the first place? Don't I have...
You know, that was a thing at some point. I remember I needed data to access something, and it was like a loop, and it was very frustrating. Yeah. I don't remember what that was, but I was like, so annoyed.
Why am I doing this?
This is my confusion. I've got the MTN app. It does all of this.
Yeah.
You know what?
If I've got WhatsApp, I've got the ability to have the MTN app.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, for me, like the biggest improvement in terms of mobile money and payments and finance and whatever is connecting my mobile wallet to my bank account. Because I feel like it should have been easier for me to move money from my bank account to my mobile wallet and vice versa. For me, that's very important. Yeah. And I feel like it should be cross-bank, not like agreements between one bank and one MSP, cross-bank. Yeah. Mm.
They're doing those integrations one at a time, though. So
not fast enough.
That whole national switch thing is still, it hasn't yet borne fruit. So.
Yeah, it's taken quite a long time. But all that frustration aside, you know, let's actually get into what we're here for today.
Topic of the day.
There's more.
The truth is, okay, like on all these topics, I could actually talk about with you guys for like a lot. this is the problem with you absorb a lot of information. So.
Yeah.
But yes, moving on to less interesting things.
Okay, beg to differ.
You know what? Let's start with this. How did you become a programmer? Like we always tell our stories, we don't really have enough time to like cycle through. But yeah.
That's a tough question. Because, I grew up around computers. Really, my dad was in IT. So the first computer I actually touched, I think I was like 5 or something. For context, because this is more normal today. But so I'll be 34 this year. So we're talking about 1990 or somewhere back then. Because my dad, you worked. Okay, I'm not gonna name drop companies, but you worked for a company that the way he tells it, they were some of the first people to bring computers into the country, when you actually had to ask Plot One for special permission to bring a computer into the country.
I'm too young.
You couldn't bring in a computer without special dispensation on some, yes, you may bring in a computer. So the company had to actually request formally from Plot One, we want to bring in such computer, whatever.
Wow.
So there was a point when they weren't laptops back then, they were personal computers. Portable computers, you know, it came in a suitcase.
or it was the suitcase.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So you know, that was the first computer I touched. He brought that home one day, along with a sheet of paper, and the sheet of paper had code on it. It was basic.
Ooh.
So back then,
it was basic.
There wasn't enough memory on the machine to like keep stuff on there. Every time you ran something, you installed it, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, you had to. There were a bunch of floppies that you put into the computer. It read that into memory.
Yeah.
Put in the next one, read it into memory. Put in the next one, read it into memory, and then it would run the software.
Tell you what, that doesn't sound familiar at all.
We've heard about it from like history.
What's a floppy?
So, Google for all you young kids. So, Wikipedia's your friend. So sheet of paper. It had BASIC on there. If you don't know what BASIC is, it's a programming language for all of you only know JavaScript people.
Shots fired.
Shade.
So, sheet of paper, some code on it, and what you would do is jump into. There was only the terminal at that point. But you'd actually type in all of this code. At the end, you hit return, and out came Frogger. And I could play Frogger. So that was my first experience doing that.
Gaming.
Every time you wanted to game, you actually had to, install or write this code in the first place. So, like, that was my first experience of programming. I was just copying stuff, but that was the first program that I ran or whatever. I don't know, six? I don't know. I was young, anyway. So also, like, I had a personal computer, like, my own PC in my own room, like, in grade six or something. This was a deal back then. Dude.
That's a big thing.
Right?
The first computer I had, that was when it had Windows 3.1 on it.
Windows what?
3.1.
Sorry. What?
Yeah.
Windows 3.1.
That was the first
computer. No, our knowledge starts from XP.
I might be
98
like,
for me.
It might be 3.0, but I think it was 3.1. But anyway, that was...
3.0, 3.1. Big difference.
Legend.
So that was my first experience as far as owning a computer. I didn't program or anything. I just gamed. I had no clue about all that. We did do some stuff in like at my school because, I didn't grow up here entirely. We moved from here to Zimbabwe at one point. From Zim, moved to SA. While I was in Zim, I think this was grade six or something, we did have a computer class where we did... It was sort of like pathfinding.
Yeah.
And in I don't think it was Pascal. May have been BASIC again. I don't remember now. But you do things like, move from location here to there. Mm. And the end result, if you program a sequence of steps, you could create shapes or patterns, whatever it was. But BASIC stuff for kids, that kind
this
of
thing. This is good. Yeah.
So that was like the first times that I started. When I got older though and was deciding what to do with my life, I did not want this for myself.
Really?
I wanted to go into automobile design. But you know how it is. Your parents don't see the same vision.
Different pages.
Sometimes you gotta reliable.
Yeah. No, sometimes you gotta force it.
You know what? Just do what I did.
So I ended up just taking the easy route because I was like, well, computers, I'm comfortable with these things, I've used them all my life. Let me do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I ended up in,
I think it kind of worked out though.
Okay, so like fast forward to today, like, how's it working out for you?
I don't know.
It's working?
As you guys know, I co-founded this one company. We're working on another one, trying to grow them, trying to deal with the challenges that we have in this country of ours, because we don't have all of the tools, all of the infrastructure that is available in other countries. It's a challenge, but it's a working challenge. The nice thing is that we're actually doing something that makes some revenue.
Which is like the
first and foremost.
Yeah, it's the most important part, right?
It was a long road to get there, but having finally arrived here, I would never work on something again without having figured out revenue first.
Okay. We'll get to that later.
you know, he mentioned something about the landscape right now, not having like the right tools, mm-hmm. or maybe even affording the right tools to build your stuff, which kind of ties into what we're talking about today, right? Yeah, bootstrapping projects. Yeah, sure. Like, okay, we'll do rounds. Like experiences with open source, which is kind of like the go-to when you really don't want to pay for something, but you need something to build something.
Is it about wanting to pay or just not being able?
Yeah, and it's mostly not being
able, right?
Yeah. There you go, yeah. That's what I think. Because, I mean, the reason I even ended up touching open source, which I didn't even understand at first, or I didn't really know about, mm-hmm. I got to an appreciation or a knowledge of open source only when my first job happened. So I was employed by my university, and they had essentially a center for open source technologies. Okay, so that was a place where they were building stuff that was open source just for the university, mm-hmm. Et cetera, and I didn't know about any of that beforehand. Yeah. You know, so it was only when I got there that I actually realized, oh, this is actually a So, as far as knowing what that is and gaining an appreciation for that, that's something that I stumbled upon myself. But then the benefits of it really became clear once I realized that, oh, wait, you want to use C-Sharp? You actually need to pay Microsoft to put that on the server? Oh, yeah. So that changed a lot of things for me.
Oh, crap. You know, like, it didn't really hit deep until you're looking for like a mail platform, like a free mail platform, in case you're looking to integrate with like Google and stuff like that. Yeah. Then it hits you, then you're like, crap.
Mail in what sense? Because there's so many to do what with mail. So.
Oh, like webmail and stuff like that. So like that became like a big deal, and you're thinking, oh, the company is not gonna, because this is like in a corporation, they don't understand tech. Mm. They want you to integrate emails. You can't send emails from your Exchange server because there's an issue, because you're using an old server, and they will not buy a new server.
They're like,
and then
no,
now,
why?
Like, and so they still expect you to get it done, and like, I'm not paying for a service to like get your work done. So now I have to look for something
open source.
Yeah. And then, you know, you stumble across a lot of stuff, and that for me that was like a big thing in terms of like getting work done at a low cost thing. And then I found Bootstrap. And like, oh, I can build a front end easily with this, like, free. I don't even know why it's, why is it free?
It's like, he came to that, like, for context, listeners, the look on his face, like, he came to that realization and he's like, wait a minute.
He could have been a meme right now.
Wait a minute, like, it's free. Like, why is it free?
yo, and like, I jumped into Laravel, right? And this is like open source, and there's like this whole thing that lets you like build web applications easily. Like most of the work is done for you, and you know there's this emphasis on actually getting work done. It's not about the glamour of writing code. I can write code. Look, I've got these lines of code on my screen. Like it's about revenue, right? Product. If you're talking revenue, product, like you need to deliver a product, and you need to get it delivered fast and efficiently. It should look good too, you know, users.
First and foremost, it should work.
So you know there's like all this stuff, and then like there's all this stuff, right?
Yeah. So for me, like, it's similar to, like, I think everyone, like, you're just looking for the free option. But, like, the more I develop as a developer, pun intended, I'm realizing that if something can significantly streamline your workflow and you have to pay for it, then I'm willing to pay for it, if that makes sense. Like you talked about, like Bootstrap and Laravel, like there are free options. Like right now, I'm working with like Spring and whatnot. Like there's all this free stuff. But when it comes to things like, okay, perfect example. And this isn't even a discussion about well, it is, but it's not directly talking about like open source. When you talk about things like web hosting, right? Usually, the more you pay, the better your web hosting option, if that makes sense, right?
Are we talking about shared stuff? Or what are we talking
about? Yeah, that's the thing, right? The cheapest is shared hosting, but it's not
optimal when you're looking at scaling up. And like last week
in the last episode
we were talking about like scaling and whatnot. Like when you want to scale some of these things, the free option is the worst thing you can do, because the free option is basically, okay, we're gonna put you in that group of the cheapskates. We're gonna put you all on that server and we're gonna be so.
But wait, I thought the point was you bootstrap till you've got the money to pay for all the stuff that you need to scale.
That's the
right?
point I'm making. Yeah. So you're like, for me in my experience, I use free things until I don't have to. Right? That's like basically that is encompassing my whole experience with open source. So if I have to pay for it, I will. I mean, I feel like eventually, and you're talking about like revenue, when you want to streamline your workflow, you don't want to start building something from scratch.
No, I actually, you know what, there's this thing about, I know this is a very contentious thing, like in the West, because there are people who don't like the fact that people in software call themselves engineers. But there's an aspect to that that I agree with. You don't find engineers in the mechanical sense, or however we want to define the people who deal with real world physical, you know, construction and machinery problems, right? Those people don't go back and decide, you know what, the design of the bolt sucks, I'm gonna build my own bolt.
Yeah.
Software people are a bit different in this, because they're like, you know what, yeah, I started learning JavaScript, the way I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna build a framework. And yeah, new framework every week. You know, so
JavaScript,
there is a real thing to not building the wheel again.
Yeah.
Because the wheel already works. It will get you from point A to point B. Like, you know, there's no reason to go and let me try a square, let me try a hexagon.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason to do this. Everybody knows circular, it'll get you places. Yeah. This is fine. You know, so as far as that's concerned, I believe that if it's out there and you can use it to get your product out, make use of it.
Yeah.
Because it helps you so much. You're not going to waste time. Particularly, one of the biggest things that I cannot be fussed with building is authentication.
Yeah.
Thank you.
User management authentication. I'm not going to build this. Why?
Thank you. You know, I had a whole conversation with some guy who was fussing about having, oh, my authentic, I built it myself. I'm like, dude, how long does it take
wasted,
you to build
like
it?
You wasted, like, no offense, like, you wasted your time if, like, you, like from scratch, built out an authentication system. Like,
it's
and
unsafe in the first place.
Yeah, that's the thing, right?
The thing about open source, the lovely thing about open source is that we haven't even defined open source, but the lovely thing about open source is the fact that there are so many people that can contribute and at the same time audit whatever it is.
Yeah.
So if you're not the security expert, some guy who likes what you're working on, who's a security expert, can come in and say, whoa, you missed this, there's a gaping hole here, and there's a vulnerability here, let's fix it by doing this.
Yeah.
Somebody finds a vulnerability,
they fix it.
Pushes a pull request, let's get that fixed, whatever, and you have a mature product at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so versus you building that yourself, you're not going to handle all of the, you know, gaping holes in whatever it is that you built, the way that a whole community of people that is worldwide can. I guess there's an internal sense of, ooh, I achieved something by building X and, you know, it works. That's great.
Yeah.
But if you're actually trying to build something that is secure, that is, you're not going to have headaches about, it's going to be safe for your users, you're not going to have a problem like the Cambridge Analytica scandal.
Yeah.
You know,
or even the Swiss voting system, man.
There you go. You know, like, yeah. So rather use something that's already tried, tested, you know, audited, and that'll get you moving faster.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in terms of authentication, right? Practical example. Like, I think in almost all the web applications I built in 2016 and 2017, right?
Yeah.
I made use of Laravel. Easy to find, easy to read documentation, thousands of contributors ready to make it more secure.
Yeah.
Lots of feedback as well, and worked like a charm.
Mm-hmm.
Focus more on building what the product is supposed to be,
yes,
rather than focus on like the tiny details that will get you nowhere.
Yeah.
So maybe defining open source, right?
Oh yeah.
Because you just mentioned we didn't define what open source are. Like,
well,
listen,
well, I think we're assuming that
yeah
this podcast,
yeah
no,
just in case.
Okay, so
I'm reading off Wikipedia, just so y'all know.
Wikipedia is your friend.
Yeah, I'm just giving you. I'm just giving you like. So, and I quote. Open source software is a type of computer software in which source code is released under a license in which the copyright holder grants users right to study, change, and distribute software to anyone for any purpose. So basically, here's this source code. You can change it. You can use it in your software and distribute it. You can use it to study. You can use it to do whatever. How you use it,
That's fine.
Yeah, depending on the license. Yeah, I mean, I was just about to ask. Because we have different types of licenses, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So the one I keep running, and like when we talk about licenses, I know little to nothing.
But I read them every single time, except for the MIT. MIT is the most permissive one.
So that's the one that I run into the most, the MIT one, right?
That's the most permissive one. That's the use it. You don't have to tell anybody you got this from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Make money off of it. Change it.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want.
And that's the one that I think I use every time, like when doing Node or whatnot. Like there's, you know, things where you put in like information about the project and whatnot, and there's the license. I think even GitHub has this thing where like it
you can pick.
You can pick and like that's like my go-to, like MIT. Okay, I'll go with that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but like yeah, that's open source. So
yeah, I think it's opensource.org, something like that. I think / licenses, something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
We'll make sure.
I will definitely make sure I got your backs, guys. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So question. You gave us a long list of all the software that you use.
I think we should publish that list.
Like,
okay, I'll go through it. Yeah.
I've got a question though, because I know no one's looking at this list, but I am. Like, there's a lot of stuff I've never really like used, and I didn't know there was such a thing as Laravel Horizon, and I thought I used Laravel a lot.
Yeah, me too.
No, like honestly, I don't follow all the releases and the blog posts and whatever. Like, I think I only started doing that when they released Telescope. Because I was really interested. I was like, oh, crap, Telescope. So, like, now I'm like...
That's the one I haven't used. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so now I look at it, I'm like, what's Horizon? So I look it up, I'm like, this is Telescope. So, like, what's the difference?
Is it? Okay, I haven't actually looked at Telescope yet. That was... There are periods of time when I kind of ignore new releases for a bit. I was laughing... Man, we can talk so much about your scaling episode.
Please.
I think you said this. Like, you know, there's... In terms of future-proofing, so it's, let me learn this language now, and then later there's a new language, and there's a new language. Like, listen, if what you're using works, chill with that.
Yeah.
it's okay. You don't have to be with the new wave. It's fine. You know, but there are times when I do kind of, like, hunker down and ignore anything new just because what I'm working on needs to be better first. So yeah, I missed what Telescope does, but as far as Horizon is concerned, well, it's basically a bird's eye view of your queue management, really, with Redis. And there is what it's used for in our case. Vesasani has a payments option that is powered by MTN's mobile money, and basically that particular integration makes use of queues that are run on Redis, and that just basically allows you to see what's going on with the queues. These are background processes, so stuff in the background that's monitoring, is this done yet, is this done, do this now, do this whatever, because we use PHP, so PHP is not like always on runtime engine.
Yeah.
So it starts, stops. You have a whole client server request cycle. So you don't have stuff running in the background perpetually. So that's what we use queues for. So that's what we use Horizon.
Yeah, and Telescope is kind of similar. Because you mentioned Redis, right? So Horizon is strictly Redis.
Yeah.
Is it?
I will not be an authority on this. I think so, but I don't want to lie.
Okay. Okay, because I noticed from the explanation, like, Telescope is similar, though it's mostly just visibility. Doesn't affect anything. It's just more like a logger.
It just logs whatever is happening.
Okay.
So like queues, requests,
queries. I remember this. Okay, no, it's not. Okay, similar to Horizon, but the use case is different. Similar interface, etc. Use case is different. That what I think Telescope is really giving you a bird's eye view of your application's life cycle. So from your booting to your requests happening to database queries, etc. All of your performance and all that. I think that's what that product does. I would have to look it up to have a better idea, but I think I remember what you're talking about. Just that it looks similar. What I like about Laravel at present, it does for PHP what Rails did for Ruby.
Yeah.
You know, there are a bunch of things that the guys at Basecamp got right as far as building
Ruby.
Rails and Ruby and Rails.
Yeah.
And made into a product that other developers could take, run with, and then create amazing software with, whilst contributing to an ecosystem that like allowed you to not rebuild the wheel.
Yeah, and you know, Ruby on Rails actually picked up really quick. I think I'll put a link to the Basecamp podcast that explained how they started Rails and that sort of thing, and how it all blew up. Like, they committed to it and built a platform using Rails, and it was really amazing. Like, now they've got like a bunch of contributors and stuff like that. I don't know if it will pick up as much as React did and Vue, like to the scale, like the scale of growth. When you look at all three, like React, because of Facebook, obviously picked up 3 years.
What do you mean by pick up though? Like, because Rails is old now, but in terms of what products Rails runs today, GitHub's on Rails.
GitHub's on a lot of platforms though.
But the primary product when it was made, it's Ruby. Like, that's the start of it. Stripe started with Ruby. Like,
let me clarify. So basically, like, when I talk about like pickup, is basically the number of contributors willing to push the product forward. Okay. So like React, because of Facebook and all the money, all the whatever, like it's really picked up quickly over the last 2-3 years. I think Vue, with absolutely no backing at all, has picked up in terms of contributors so greatly, it's amazing. It's Matomo though, because I know it was on the list, and I really couldn't Google everything on the list.
Okay, I got lazy to put links down for everything, I won't lie.
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I did put a few links down.
Yeah, I saw.
So Matomo is a rebrand of what used to be called Pivik.
Okay.
Pivik is an open source analytics platform. It is the equivalent of your Google Analytics. Open source, and you self-host it. So one of the issues with Google Analytics, if you notice in there, they actually estimate a bunch of your data. They're crunching so much data that they're not giving you necessarily
exact numbers
for everything. So in our case, like, you're getting an estimate or like a broad look at what your numbers may be, quote unquote.
Oh, really?
So you eliminate any fuzziness. Because, like, there'll be days when my co-founder, Jeremy, would ask me, dude, how many sales did we have today? Like, and he's trying to confirm, because we've got different number in our store backend versus what's showing up in the Google Analytics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they're fuzzing some of the numbers sometimes. Just because, they crunch a lot of data. So, you know, you can select, I want my results to be more accurate, but it takes longer for the results for all the data to refresh each time you change pages, etc. So just removing that from the equation, basically host it yourself, and we get better stats from Matomo. So like there's great stuff in there.
So wait, how much bootstrapping have you guys actually done at Investasani? Like, if you're self-hosting, are you self-hosting on like, I'm just trying to get an insight. I know you can't answer all questions.
What do you mean by self-hosting?
Do you have your own server? And
physical,
yeah, like a physical server.
I would never do that.
Wait, is that based solely on cost, or is this like a
bunch of other
it's
factors?
On work.
Okay,
no, it's on work. If you have a physical server, you now need to be a server admin. I'm a developer.
True. Yeah.
I hate doing DevOps. Being quite frank, I'm a developer. I would like to work on product. Mm. I don't want to spend time debugging why. Let's find an example here. I don't know. why are there no logs right now? Oh, wait. Why is the application bugging here and then realizing, it can't write logs? Why can't it write logs? Oh, there's a permissions issue. oh, I need to. That's not my life. And like, if you have your own server, this is more into. There's a problem with the network. You have to. Okay, so firstly, cost. Because if you go to NetOne and ask them to actually give you, what do they call it? Is it 2U or? One U, whatever.
Yeah, whatever, you know, it's funny. One U, two U. So I was asking, what's one U, two? And it's just like, you know, this little space in the rack.
One rack.
One rack is like one U.
So for them to give you, you know, space for one rack, you know, you're talking some, I think it's $500. I last went there like 3 years ago. So these are old numbers. But it's like $500 a month. You know, you know, their data center has all of the power backups and whatever it is. But then you're paying for your own internet connection, so you have to have a conversation with one of the ISPs on some, hey, can I have some internet to my box, please? You know, so you're paying for that by yourself. If there's a problem with it, yes, they've got a backup, but you always have to be on the ball for that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. I would rather have what we have, which is just make use of VPSs and deal with that issue. That's a lot better. You know, instead of having your own hardware is... There's no use case for us to have our own hardware at this point. The costs don't make sense.
So where else are you shaving the costs?
All over the place, man. Well, firstly, we don't employ anybody. that's one thing.
You can do that?
Yes, you can make people work.
Why?
Didn't Kanye have a song about this called New Sun? Anyway. Well, obviously, everything that we use, well, not everything, but most of the stuff that we use is open source. So, you know, we're not paying licensed things on our server because we're not using anything that's Microsoft related or whatever. You know, we don't have massive enterprise costs in terms of the stuff that we're using. So, you know, granted, that comes with no support from somebody who really knows what's going on.
Yeah,
with
which is the downside, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, it's working all right for us at the moment because, you know, we don't necessarily have the most capital in this country. I think even getting to where we've gotten to is difficult in this country because it's hard to actually put aside money here.
Yeah.
You know, the simple facts are that in the IT industry in Zambia, you're not getting... the kinds of salaries, or in fact, let me just even say across the board, doesn't have to be IT. Across the board, we don't get the kinds of salaries that really allow you to save the way people can build for, you know what, I'm going to become an entrepreneur, let me create Runway, and I'm going to save enough to give me six months, a year of Runway to live the same lifestyle, right? Maybe cut down a little bit, but I've heard of people doing this, they've got families. You know, they've got a wife, a newborn, and I'm quitting my job. I've got a year's worth of runway. I'm going to try something for myself. You can't do that.
Yeah.
No.
You know, and we've pumped in, I kid you not, six figures, which we haven't yet made back. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that we decided, you know, we're going to do this and actually make this work, you know, kind of thing. So, and in order to do that, you have to... take the cuts wherever you can. And if that's not paying for certain pieces of software, figuring it out by yourself, then that's what you've got to do.
I would have wanted you to speak a bit more on the front end as well.
No, because you're a front end guy.
Yeah, and look,
the great divide right here. It's the front end and back end.
Yeah, and like we mentioned before, it's just if you log onto a site now, it's just simple, it's just straightforward. All you have to do is search, click, you know, and buy it. You know, it's simple. So I'd want to know how I saw UI kit.
So I would love to take credit for everything about the way that it looks, but it's just a heavily customized paid theme, to be quite honest. Like our store, the stack is a bit broad, so. Our store is basically WordPress running WooCommerce for the payments, not by choice, but that was the only way to get card payments running without having to build the card payments processing myself, which I wasn't going to do. I don't know how much detail to get into here. I'll leave this for now. Okay, so WordPress, WooCommerce, and then in addition to that, we have a bunch of things. So there is the corporate website, then there is some back-end tools that we have. There is a not yet released rights holder or publisher platform which gives reporting for artists.
Okay.
There is a back-end that manages all of the processing of music and putting all of the information into the store, because this is not because of the fact that we were forced into doing the WooCommerce and WordPress thing. Getting all that information into there is not a manual task that has to be automated. So there is a whole Laravel backend that makes use of a bunch of stuff to actually take raw, if it's WAV or MP3 that we get from artists, take all of that, turn it into a real database of content, including processing everything to the point where we have all the 20-second previews as well as the distributable payloads when people buy stuff that goes on to Amazon's S3
bucket.
Yeah, so all of that in the background as well. So as far as the front end of the store, that's a heavily customized paid thing, which uses Foundation.
Okay.
As far as the front end framework for that. Then let's see, UI kit is on our corporate website, about.messesani.
Yeah.
And there's also, I use Spectre for the payments. So the mobile money payments, that uses Spectre.
Okay.
Because that takes you from the store to a different, to a Laravel setup, which actually does the mobile money payments. Mm. And runs that. So yeah, there are a few
lot of wheels, actually.
Yeah, no, it is. And most people, I was going to say this as well, most people don't usually see that whole process, eh?
Yeah.
You would think design is actually how it works. The fact that,
This is a running argument. And you know, me, I respect front-end designers. Like, I'm not a UX, UI guy. I suck at that stuff. Like, really.
I've noticed. sorry. Yeah, okay.
Hey, I suck so bad that I just said, you know what, I'm just back end.
This
fine.
Is not me.
I just can't. Like.
What, you mean you're not full stack? The blasphemy.
Not full stack at all.
I hated full stack, I'm not gonna lie. And it was just the front end.
You guys have had a conversation about this, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Jack of all trades,
master plan. Yeah. Anyway, I was just about to conclude. Like, front end stuff. If you can find like a paid theme that does 60% of the work for you, I think that really works.
Yeah.
It depends. Okay, depends on.
So for us, at the end of the day, we need product.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all right. How long is it going to take me to do this? Because if you have a team, if I've got a guy who's doing UI and UX, this is easier. I don't have to worry about this. Here, these are the API endpoints. Just make sure you map to these, or here's a mock server here. Here's some dummy data. Just build on that. Mm-hmm. We'll integrate
later.
We'll
tie it together.
Right? We'll tie it together later. If I could do that, great. I'm doing everything, though. Mm. And mentioning all of these moving components that I just talked about, I don't have the time to be building the UI from scratch. Mm. I would love to. This is in the pipes. There's a plan for this, but it's not now. And it's more likely to happen when I can employ somebody to help me out with that workload, because it's very difficult trying to keep all of those moving parts together. Like, say, for instance, the platform for our rights holders and publishers. This is something actually that's way behind, just because it's so hard to keep developing and iterating on everything at once.
Guys, let's talk mental health. How are you dealing, dude?
Dude.
I took a turn.
No.
You had to go serious.
I was wondering how that's that question. Mukuma just point blank.
Hey, I'm a blunt guy. Sorry.
You know what? To be honest, it can be hard, right? Because listen, building your own things, this is a difficult thing. It's helped by the fact that there is revenue. The fact that we're paying taxes, the fact that for the last 2 years, 3 months, we've been paying artists, the fact that we've built something that actually makes this happen, the fact that in the last payout, we paid out artists, and one artist was on Twitter going buck on some money hit the account. the fact that that happens is a great motivator, and it keeps you, like, it gives you purpose.
Yeah.
I think one of the things about dealing with mental health on different levels, of course, you know, is that you need to be doing something that gives you a sense of value and some, you know, something that makes you feel like what you're doing is worthwhile.
Yeah, it's worth
like, that's what keeps you going. You need that fuel. So, in my case, having that be a thing is what has helped me keep plugging away at this stuff. And then also the best cure for any time that you're feeling low, because you know you get the times, you get your imposter syndrome, you get your.
It doesn't sound like it does.
Everybody gets this. I don't really feel good at this. I don't. You know, you have low motivation. Whatever it is, best cure, ship something. Just
even no matter how small, right?
Doesn't matter how small it is. That's why I actually even made Silhouette. I was bummed out. Silhouette is really small. Really tiny.
It is really tiny.
I kept finding myself, I would make do a new install of Laravel. I'm thinking, okay, I just want to test out something. And then I'm like, oh, I need to do a little front-end piece for login. I need to do the login form and etc. And the profile thing and whatever. I don't want to always be doing this.
I want to do that so bad.
And I was like, you know what? Let me just do this. This is the first time I put together a package that you could actually pull and add to a project. This is the first time I did that. Before that, anything I had done open source was just, I'm using something, I've found an issue, let me contribute and fix that thing.
Yeah.
This is the first time I did that myself. And you do it, didn't do it for somebody necessarily to use immediately, but I now was pulling in my own project into my own stuff. And I was like, oh wait, no, this is actually cool.
I pulled it in too, so... just in case no one told you this, there's some people that actually use Silhouette. So, you know what? We're getting to the end. Yeah. Like, we're getting to near the end. You talked about imposter syndrome. There's something in his notes. I don't know if you like read on this, but it's the Dunning-Kruger effect. Like, yeah. I read this and I was like,
mind blown.
Please explain.
The Dunning-Kruger effect. It describes the growth of an individual. It can be in any field, but definitely it applies to software development. There's this phenomenon where you just start, and I'm sure you've seen this a lot. I get this a lot, because let me explain what it is first. So there's that initial excitement of learning something new.
Yeah.
Okay. And actually figuring it out for the first time and etc. And this feeling like I know what I'm doing. Whilst not realizing you don't know much about the subject matter. And over time, you realize, wait, the subject matter is huge. Yeah. And your confidence starts to drop. And you reach this valley wherein you've understood the subject matter is wide. You've gained some knowledge, but now you really feel like you don't know anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the more knowledge you gain, the better you are, yes. Right?
But the more
versus
you see.
At the beginning, where you thought that you knew everything, but you weren't good. The more knowledge you gain, the more you realize what you don't know, at the same time, you're better.
Yeah. And you know, just to jump in on that, like, most people give up at that point.
The critical
point.
At points,
the bottom of the valley,
where
you see what you got yourself into, and then you go, fuck me. And then you're just like, crap. Like, I've experienced that quite a lot. I'll start
I was like, when he was explaining it, I was like, shit, like,
JavaScript journey,
like right on the mark,
React, Angular, Vue, like, I've been through all of those. I've been through to the valley and just like, what am I doing this for?
Yeah.
Right now, this is not even related to whatever I'm building for work. So I'm doing this for fun, basically. So yeah, I kind of relate to that. I just didn't know what it was called.
There's a book that really helped me by Seth Godin. The Dip. It's called The Dip.
Seth Godin is the god.
You should read it. I should
share The Dip?
The Dip.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically what you said.
Yeah.
But it's The
Dip. There's something as well for in related to startups. Basically called The Trough of Sorrow. You build a thing. This is chasing product market fit. So you build a thing. You think you've built a thing for a specific market or use case.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily hit. So at the beginning, you've got all this excitement and the graph is going up, but then it goes down after, you know, all of your friends, family, and all the people who feel pity have supported your product.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
After all that dies down.
They've supported
down,
the podcast.
After all that enthusiasm dies down, then there's this, wait, nobody's using it?
Why?
That's the trouble, sorry. Yeah. Until you finally find a point where, oh, you make tweaks, changes, whatever, or it finally clicks with people and then it starts going up.
Yeah. So it's uphill from then. Yeah.
So that's also something as far as like startups and you know,
life in general, man.
Dude, like I'm thinking like we need to do a podcast on some of this material because like it's hitting hard personally.
And you know, this is like a really wonderful way to like close the podcast, because what you just talked about, like even the Trophosaurus, like it's a really big deal. And one of the things that I really find valuable is having a listening ear. Like you never know what to tweak if you're not listening for like feedback or like little tiny chatter. Sometimes it's not like directly at you.
Yeah, sure.
It's just snippets that you hear around and you suddenly pick it up and then you start like fixing it in, and it's really valuable. So last thoughts, everybody.
What'd you call that book again?
The dip
The Trough of Sorrow.
The book.
Yeah, so basically the other one wasn't a book. Almost everything
was
like
a book.
The Trough of Sorrow?
No, it's just
it's a theory.
It's on the internet somewhere. You'll find it. Somebody wrote about it in a blog post. It's around. Yeah. You'll find it. So, the little Trough of Sorrow, you will see it.
And it'll be in the show notes. So don't worry about
it. Even in his book, like he cites that everything in life worth doing is controlled by the dip. And he gives examples of founders and entrepreneurs, and it's deep.
If you're on a startup journey, you're trying to become an entrepreneur, I can't recommend enough. I made my co-founder listen to this when we were starting business. We had a very interesting time, because when we were launching, we had a lot of trips here into Osaka. We're based in Ndola, for those who don't know.
Yeah.
We came down here a bunch of times and we talked about everything during that period. And I made him listen to this podcast because I had found it so impactful. It really describes the journey that you go through if you are building something with somebody else and you're not doing it alone. But the interactions that go on between people who found something is really, really, there's nothing like this aside from like actual romantic relationships. It's that deep.
It's chemistry.
It's that deep. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you're on this kind of journey, definitely you need to check out season one of a podcast called Startup, which is published by Gimlet. Amazing.
I've actually heard of it. Yeah.
Amazing, amazing.
What? Startup?
Yeah, Startup. Okay.
You know what?
It's published by Gimlet.
Okay. You know what? Like,
we're recently bought by Spotify.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So as I was about to say, you know what you just mentioned? I had that thing today. I have a co-founder, right? And I called him today, like out of the blue. I'm like, dude, how do we make a million by the time we're 35? Like, it was like, we went on this tangent and it was romantic. Like, it's like, this, you can't explain this relationship. You really can't.
No, you can't.
I shit you not, you really can't.
Yeah.
And at some point I mentioned to him, you know, I wouldn't have done this with anyone else, right?
And I say like, this, dude, I feel
I say this,
way.
And I say
you're
this.
Running that game, huh?
Yeah, and I say this, and he's like, yeah, I know. I don't like, yeah, like, so
like,
I got it, I got it. I was like, dude, I know we haven't made, we haven't made the progress we wanted, but dude, we'll get there. Anyway, this is Sawbones on Twitter, Sawbones on Instagram, Sawbones.
So Jorelli360.
Okay, and that's at Zambian _ geek.
Okay, if you're looking for me, I am on basically everything at TWMBX. If you're interested in Vesasani and what we're doing, we're on every social platform that matters, we think. At Vesasani, that's spelled MVESESANI. Buy some music. We'd love it if you did that.
Also, if you go to the Vesasani website, please click on Zamrock. Like, guys, the visuals, amazing. I'll leave you with that.
Let me do that just now.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Codecast. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at CodecastZM and subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you never miss a show. Leave us a rating on iTunes and please do tell a friend about the show.